Jocelyn Mitchell, Adam Wallach, on the 26th of May, 2003. Now, Jocelyn, can you tell me how you first became interested in gardening?
I didn't have much interest in gardening until my husband bought this property, which had this guilfoyle historic garden. And it was a bit of a shock to me, but I didn't have much option but to roll up my sleeves and try and get to work and learn about it. So we engaged John Patrick to help me start to deal with the garden, and he's the one that introduced me to the Garden History Society and told me about it and said I should join and I would learn things from being part of that society.
And when did you buy this place?
1980.
Oh.
Yes, so we've been here 23 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined the Garden History Society, I would think, either in 1980 or 81, very soon after we came here in any case. And I very quickly was asked to go on the national committee, which I did, and I remained on that committee for 9 years, and six of which I was the chairman.
Now, when you first joined, what was the purpose of the society?
Well, I believe it was to help people, partially to help people with like me to manage large gardens, to foster an interest in the community, foster an interest in historic gardens, with an eye, obviously, to making sure that they were kept, if possible. One of the aims also early on was to try and get some kind of tax relief for people like me who have to spend a very large amount of our income on the upkeep of this garden. But sadly, that is one thing that has never really come to be.
Mm. Was there a collective philosophy about the History Society? Did everyone have the same sort of aims? And
I don't think so. I think we got a lot of people who were just interested in gardens, and it was a lovely way to go, with our trips and so on, it was a lovely way to go around and see beautiful gardens. So I think it was pretty mixed lot of people, reasons why they belonged to the society. But there was a very dedicated band of people like Howard Tanner that began the society, and they stayed involved for a very long time and were at the core of the running of the society for a long time.
Mm. Can you think of some other issues like the tax one, which were a problem in the early days, which were maybe resolved or not resolved?
Not really. To be honest, I don't think we did an awful lot in the early days. I think that recently the publications, the journal, are just wonderful. But I don't recall an awful lot happening early days. But perhaps I should tell you about the early days of the journal.
Mm-hmm.
When we began, the secretary was Tim North, who did a terrific lot of work for the society. And he had a small publication, just more or less like a pamphlet, called Garden Cuttings. And he allowed the society to devote the middle pages to news of the society. At some stage, he decided he became more ambitious and wanted to produce a larger publication. And of course, it was very handy for him to have the society as subscribers. But he then asked the society for 3/4 of their subscription money for his publication. And there was, and now I think it's a really a really good publication.
Mm. And when you first became involved with the... This is the National Committee, is it? Yes.
That's
who,
right.
Who else was on that committee in your first years?
Howard Tanner and Peter Watts from Sydney. Ferry Nielsen from Tasmania and later Anne Cripps. I'm having some struggle to think of the South Australian members. There were members from... I'm sorry, I just can't remember their names at the moment. Mm-hmm. Tony Whitehill, he was one from South Australia. And there was a Western Australian representative who I'm struggling to remember too. Mm-hmm. We're talking back about mid-80s now, so that's sort of almost 20 years ago.
Where did you have your meetings?
We had them in Sydney or Melbourne mostly. We always had our annual meeting wherever the conference was held, and that could be anywhere, Bowral, Tasmania. So that we always had a meeting there, and we had three other meetings during the year, Sydney and Melbourne mostly.
Were the conferences something which was started straight away?
Yes.
And they happened every year?
Yes, they were, because soon after I joined, which we went to Hobart for the conference, and that's my husband and I both went to this particular one. We didn't know anybody in the society at that time, and that's where we met lots of society members who were very kind to us, and many of them we still to this day are in contact with, and I'm still a member of the society.
Do you remember any tours in particular, apart from that one?
They all tend to blend in a bit. I can remember going to Bowral, which was very nice. I organised one myself. I think it was 84, so it was quite soon after I'd been involved. I organised one centred in Ballarat. So that was quite a job, because there weren't many members around to help. But I think it was quite successful. Bowral, Tasmania, Adelaide, Brisbane... I didn't go to Toowoomba. I don't remember anything particularly outstanding. Some of them had fabulous speakers. Some of them were just average.
Do you remember any gardens in particular, in Tasmania, for instance? But Tasmania was the first conference, wasn't it?
That's right. The garden that I remember most there was really the Botanic Gardens, where a lot of the conference was centred around. But I couldn't remember the names of the gardens. I have a picture of some of them in my mind, but I couldn't remember the names of them now.
Did you find that you were developing a love for historic gardens in general?
Oh, I certainly did. I learnt a lot from John Patrick. I learnt the botanical names of things. Even today, I don't know the common names of things, because he had someone map my garden for me and name every plant. So I used to go around with the list and learn the plants. And I've forgotten what you asked me.
Did you develop a love for historic gardens?
Yes. Sorry. Well, I think in those early years I visited lots and lots of gardens. As I got to know people, I was able to say, well, I'd love to come and see your garden. And I was really in a high learning mode. And I did. I learned to love gardens. And today, it doesn't matter if they're historical gardens or modern gardens, I'm interested.
Mm-hmm. You said your husband thrust you into this interest by buying this place. Did he have an interest in historic gardens?
Absolutely not. He only saw the farm. And I don't allow him in the garden because we have very different philosophies. He's an engineer by training, and he likes things very neat and sharp and gets very busy like a lot of men with the chainsaw. So I like things much more informal. So I keep him out of the garden.
And when you started on this garden, did you feel you had a commitment to try to keep it as it was, or have you changed its style or its plans?
Very early on, it became obvious it was still very much in the Guilfoyle style and very much like it was when he first designed it. A number of changes had been made in the garden, and I decided that I would try and keep it very much in the Guilfoyle style, not slavishly. I was quite prepared to add new plants and different plants. But one example is a previous owner's had straightened his beautiful curved paths around the garden, and we took those up and put back the curved paths. And on one side of the garden, we actually found the old path underneath as we went along, which was quite exciting. Mm-hmm. So very much trying to keep it in the Guilfoyle tradition. Mm-hmm. I'm just always aware of that when I'm planning.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some of these early committee members. Have you maintain any particular friendships or interests through meeting them?
Yes, I have. Particularly Howard Tanner in Sydney, even though we don't see each other very often.
Mm-hmm. And why him in particular?
Well, I think he was the previous chairman. He was very supportive of me, and we just became friends. And he's still interested in the Garden History Society, takes an interest in it. Even recently, we were on one of their tours up to Lake Mungo. We were both on that same tour. I guess we just liked each other and became friends. Mm. And we don't contact each other a lot, but he was the main one. Fairy Nielsen. I feel I can call them any time if I went to Tasmania. Well, I don't stay in touch with them. Mm. Everybody gets on with their lives. Mm. I think we became quite close over the troubles we had. the committee became quite close.
And who was on the committee at that time? Was it that same group you've mentioned before? Mm-hmm. 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 And were there any other troubles apart from the journal?
No, not at all. It's always been the most friendly society, and easy. I always think gardening people are really, generally speaking, nice people.
But why do you think that?
Why are they? I don't know. Because a friend once who didn't know about gardening said, "Why do you like doing all this?" I said, "Well, one of the reasons is all the people are so nice."
Do you think the society has fulfilled its aims?
I think it's doing a lot of good work, and I think it is fulfilling its aims. I think they've always been a bit disappointed that they don't appeal to a larger membership. That was one of the things we were trying to do. We always had great hopes. We couldn't believe that lots and lots of people would be really interested in this. But I think the membership has stayed stable for 20-something years. Which is...
What sort of efforts have you made, or did you make, to try and broaden the membership?
Well, in the early days, it was just the simple things like having membership pamphlets printed, encourage members to get their friends interested. Very simple things, but I think over the years, people have done more. But I don't know the details.
In those early days, were most of the members people like you who had large historic gardens that they were
not at all? No, not at all. There were a few of us. There aren't all that many people that have these kind of gardens, or are mad enough to. This garden is actually on the nation's heritage list, but it really doesn't mean much. There is nothing to stop me putting a fence up and letting the sheep in. Sometimes I feel like doing it because of the cost.
Does that being on that list give you any help?
No. I think the Commonwealth can't take over for some other purpose. It's something quite ridiculous. Mm. Mm.
Can you describe what sort of people the early members were? Were they mostly female or male, for instance? Or more elderly or young? Mm.
I think they're...
City or country?
Yeah. Very mixed lot. Of course, Dame Elizabeth being one of the founders and Howard Tanner was one of the founders. I think there was a good mix of sexes. It definitely was not dominated by either sex. Perhaps the conferences had more females, but often because they ran on a weekday or at least started on a weekday. But there's always been a lot of males involved. Mm. And I think the National Committee has always been pretty much evenly divided between males and females.
Mm. You would have taken over from Dame Elizabeth, is that right?
Howard Tanner. Howard, yes.
Now, why was she a suitable person to be the first chairwoman?
Why was she?
A suitable sort of person to be the first chairwoman. Mm.
Well, Dame Elizabeth is a very enthusiastic gardener and has supported so many wonderful things. I guess she thought it was just a fantastic idea. She was a very well-known and respected person and liked person in the community. So that's a pretty good start, I think, for publicising or getting the society going.
David Yenkin was another very early member. Did you know him at all?
He was not on the committee, but I actually do know him because his family property is not very far from here.
Was he important to the society?
Oh, I think he was in the early days, and I remember reading he gave a paper at the very first conference, which I remember reading. But he wasn't, I think he was a professor at the time. He was a very busy person and he wasn't active in the society when I came into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phil Simons was an early committee member.
No, she was also gone. She couldn't have stayed very long,
right.
I don't think, because I think the society started in 1980 and I think I was on the committee 82, 83. Mm-hmm. But Phil, I only knew a little bit from those early days.
And did you know Sophie Ducker?
Yes, well, Sophie used to come on every conference, so I knew her quite well.
Mm-hmm. Did she make a contribution to the society herself, apart from going on the tours?
Oh, very much so. She's a very academic person and a botanist, I think, by... she was very keen on the society. One of the things that was really good about the conference is that you met people like her and you could learn from them. She gave papers at some conferences. She attended meetings, always had something to say. So she was active and did contribute.
And what about Tommy Garnett? Did you know him?
Yes, very well.
Mm. In what way was he important to the society?
Well, I think once again, a bit like Dame Elizabeth, he was a very well-known and respected gardener. Mm. And while he wasn't particularly active in the way of being on committees and things, that wasn't his way at all. He would come to conferences. I once went on a garden history tour of New Zealand, which was organised by the Australian Garden History Society, which he led. Mm. So he did things like that. And that was, I mean, it was wonderful to go on a trip with him, mm. with his knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Was he on the committee at all?
I don't believe so. No, no. Don't think he was a committee person.
He was good at writing, wasn't he?
Yes, and he had his own place at Blackwood, which is a garden which was open to the public and a bit of a nursery, and he had his writing. And I mean, he just liked working out in the garden himself.
And some of these early members thought that the society was rather elitist because it was quite expensive. Did you mm-hmm. find that?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think what the first subscription was. I think when the time we had the split with the journal, it was about $30, which I expect in the 80s probably was quite high. But if we were going to produce a publication, you had to, it's not as if we made any profit. most of the money went to publishing a journal, because all the people, of course, work. It was only in recent years we've paid somebody to conduct some of the affairs of the society, and we've paid somebody probably one day a week or 2 days. She might do now, I'm not sure.
Mm. Now, these tours and the journal are the Victorian interests, aren't they?
Well, Victoria's always been the strongest branch by a long way. Mm. And, I mean, just reflects the fact that most Victorians are more interested in gardening, certainly than New South Wales people. Tasmanians interested, South Australians, but Victoria's always been by far the strongest branch. and that's why they organise more than the other places, I guess. But they all branches organise events, lectures in the winter, trips. And they all do it.
And did you go interstate much as being part of the National Committee?
No, only to national conferences. It was, I guess, by that time I had started a nursery here, so I had a business to run, and it became more and more difficult to get away as the business grew, and that's one of the reasons I finally I resigned from the committee.
Now, in your view, what is an historic garden? Is it more the style and the plan, or the contents of the garden, or both?
I think it has to be a combination of age and possibly the designer. It might be important because of the designer. It certainly must have a large number of features of its original features, or to be able to be restored to some extent. I guess, when does a garden become historic? How old does it have to be? I don't know. It would have to be a minimum of 50 years, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you had started your own nursery. Mm-hmm. What sort of plants are you growing in that?
We're growing unusual perennials and shrubs. A lot were propagated from this garden. And then I started importing seed. And as we grew, we went more into shrubs. And we really found a niche market in Western Victoria where the big nurseries didn't bother to come, particularly over the winter months. And we were able to service them much better. And then we took a stand down at the big wholesale plant market. But what finished us in the end was the business got to a stage where it either had to get bigger or stop. And I needed a much bigger truck because the business was growing But the economics didn't work out because of distribution. We're just too isolated here. We're too far. The wholesale markets are a 3-hour drive.
And with those sort of plants, did you choose to do to follow that line so that you could regenerate gardens like your own, historic ones?
Oh, certainly. I felt that nurseries, the offerings in nurseries were very limiting, and they're all pretty much offering the same things. And you have to remember, this is before gardening became such a big thing in the state, because it really only started in the 80s, this huge interest in gardenings, and the open garden scheme started, which I was involved with that as well. And it was definitely an attempt to introduce new plants and better plants that people weren't able to obtain anywhere else. The nursery was open here as well, and so we had some retail sales, and we got people coming from a lot from interstate, so the word got around. But in the end, I was, in my 60s, and I thought, I don't know that I want to get bigger anymore, and I couldn't see that it was going to be worthwhile enough because of the distribution. So I ended up just closing down.
Mm. Were they mostly exotic plants that you...
Yes, didn't do natives at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I know very little about natives because all my knowledge about gardening has come from here. But I'm just starting to get quite interested in them. But I don't have much opportunity to plant them here. They don't look right.
No, that would be part that you... Could you do that within the Guildford style of a garden or not?
Not really. I don't believe so. He used a lot of New Zealand plants, but almost no Australian natives. I've looked at lists of his plantings. Very, very few. There is a garden plan, his original plan in existence of this garden, which is owned by the previous owners, but I have a copy of it. But sadly, the planting list had been lost over the years. But you can guess pretty well what he put in, and there are a few old photographs that I've used as guidance.
Can you think of any other early members of the society who have made an important contribution? The Brooks family, I think, were quite important, weren't they, at Macedon?
Yes, well, they were extraordinarily good gardeners and with a lot of knowledge. And just like a lot of people, they were very generous with their knowledge, and just they came to conferences. And I think that's the way everybody got value from them, rather than being involved in committees and so on.
Have you been to their garden?
Yes. Their garden at Wood End is owned by somebody else now.
Yes,
I've been there, yes, a few times. Mm. And I've seen their garden in Malvern as well some years ago. But, I mean, she's Marion is a really top plants woman. And I've said gardeners are nice people. They're all just love sharing their knowledge, and she's one of those.
And what about Mimi Ramsey? Do you know her?
Oh, yes, I did, yes. Mm. Yes, Mimi just fell into the same category. She just loved gardening. She used to come to lots of things, conferences, lectures, and so on. Delightful person. Opened her garden generously.
And where was her garden?
At Mount Macedon.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And in what way was that particularly interesting in any way?
Well, of course, it's very different to here. It's a mountain garden, and it was interesting to me because the plants she could grow, there's no way I could grow them here. I can't grow rhododendrons or anything that needs acid soil. In fact, quite the reverse. The plants that do well here seemed to like alkaline soil. But her garden was on a slope. It was up in Mount Macedon, which has so many beautiful gardens. She had a very good gardener, and it was a beautiful garden.
Was she on committees at all?
Don't think so. Don't think so, not that I can recall.
And what about Abathea
Russell? Yes, well, of course, this Russell's, we bought this place from the Russells. Mm-hmm. And we met Alethea and Philip at the first conference. So we hadn't met them before, because when we bought this place, they had actually gone from here. And we became friendly with them, and they've always been very helpful, and they've given us some old photographs and told us what they remember of the history of the garden, which was all very helpful. Mm-hmm. And Alethea, of course, I forgot, was very much on the National Committee too. When I first went on, she was the membership secretary for years. Mm-hmm. So she did a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Do they have an historic garden now?
No. They're pretty much retired. Well, they're in their 80s. Mm-hmm. And they live at Bowen Heads, and have just got they've just built a retirement house and have a new garden.
Now, in the early days of the journal, when Mr. North was involved, was anyone else involved in preparing that or writing for it?
Very early days, I think he did most of it, to be honest. He did a lot of work. I have to say he did a lot of work for the society as a secretary, and more than any other committee member, probably. And it really wasn't until we broke away that we solicited articles from other members or other members of the community.
Mm-hmm. And was someone put in charge of the journal then?
I was trying to think who that was before you came. I think it was Richard Aitken. And I was going to have a look. I've got just about all of them here. But I haven't had time to look up. I think it was Richard. He certainly did it for some time, in the early days. Mm-hmm. And he's been responsible since, editing that Oxford Companion to Australian Gardens. He's always been very involved and done a lot of work for the society.
Yes. And the name escapes. I'm just going to ask about someone else. While it's coming back to me, do you think the society is going well now?
I don't know very much about it. I have only just sort of started being a little bit more active and going to some things. For many years I haven't. I find it very difficult to get to Melbourne sometimes. And living on a property like this, there's always too much work. I think it's probably mixed. I think Victoria's going very well, but they have trouble getting people to come onto committees. Not an unusual thing. some of the branches are going really well, and some not so well. That's always thus. They all have their ups and downs, depending if there's somebody, like in Victoria, we have Helen Page now, who's just puts in so much time and effort. If a branch has somebody like her, it's going to obviously do quite well.
Do you think the Victorian branch is one of the stronger ones at the moment?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. It still is probably the strongest branch.
And for what reasons, apart from Helen?
Well, I think I've said before, I think Victorians love gardens. They have much more interest in gardens. Just as a very general statement, much more interest than other states or areas.
Yes. When you were having those meetings in Melbourne in the early days, did you have a headquarters in Melbourne? Where would you have had the meetings?
No, we didn't have an office at all. In fact, When I was chairman, we did get an office towards the end. We went to the Botanic Gardens and they gave us an office in the old astronomer's residence. They gave us a very, like, it was about 6 feet by 4, but it did at least give us a base to store things, and I thought that was great. And it was a start, and now they've gone on, and they still have an office at the Botanic Gardens.
And how many meetings would you have had each year, for instance?
Only 4 national ones, mm-hmm. Yes. And I don't know how often the branches meet. Probably once a month, but I'm not sure.
Yes. Would you have any suggestions for the society now?
Yes, try and get tax relief for people with historic gardens. In this district, for example, in the Western District, there were so many enormous old gardens. They're nearly all gone because, as everybody knows, the living on the land has become leaner and leaner, and that people can't afford a gardener. Apparently there was 17 gardeners in this garden when it first started. And today, with modern equipment, it's a 2-gardener garden, but I can't afford 2 gardeners. But, you know, I'm nearly one, so we have one. And with occasional casual help, we managed to keep it up, and I don't get enough. I don't believe I do enough development. I'd like to do more, but it's just too expensive.
Mm. For that reason, do you think the society might have trouble in maintaining its membership in the future? Because there aren't so many historic gardens around?
No, I don't think that. I think that people are more aware of the importance and of keeping up historic gardens, and I think the Garden History Society actually encourages people with historic gardens because I think they're amazing how they come out and to some gardens and do have working bees. They all come for a whole weekend, and that stimulates the owner and encourages the owner to keep going. And they, I'm sure they're helpful also with information and how to find plants and what to do about this and that. So I think they certainly encourage the preservation of historic gardens.
Do you think they could do more of that sort of thing, actually have working bees?
I don't think it would work. I'm not sure how many gardens in Victoria I can think of. 3 that they're doing currently, and that would probably be as much as they could manage. And they'd go twice a year to each place for a weekend. So that's 6 weekends. A lot of time for people to give up just to go and work in someone else's garden. They may have others, but I think it's 3. Mm. One is in this area.
And we're talking about private gardens, aren't we?
Oh, yes, except Bishop's Court. I suppose you call that a private garden. Bishop's Court in Melbourne is their latest project. And that garden would have really, I think, would have gone if it hadn't been for the Garden History Society lobbying the church not to sell it, that it was important. And then they've now go and work there, and they had a big sort of fair, I suppose you call it, there last year. Hugely, they got hundreds of people. I potted up hundreds of plants for them, and so did everyone else. And now they've created this huge interest in Bishop's Court in the preservation, and they're helping restore it, which I think is smart. That's the sort of thing that the society is all about.
Yes. Do you know of any other gardens that could need that help?
I'm sure there are some. They just don't come to mind.
What about public gardens? provincial botanic gardens. Is the society interested in those sort of places?
Yes, they are. I mean, I don't think they'll go and work in them, but sometimes they keep their finger on the pulse of what is happening in those gardens, and if there's something happening that they think is inappropriate, they will certainly lobby, write letters, approach the councils or whatever. They're very good at that now, and try to steer them in the right direction.
Do you think the society has changed along the way?
Not a lot. Not really. No.
And do you think that's a good thing? Or do you think it needs to change?
But it could probably do with a boost. And change often will bring in other, new people, new ideas. That can't be a bad thing. Probably would help, but I'm not quite sure. It's a fairly limiting thing, that their aims and objectives. So I'm sure they could try some different directions, but I don't have any suggestions.
Does it have links with overseas societies, like the one in England?
I don't know. I mean, when I was chairman, I certainly did have links with the Garden History Society in England. I'm not sure. Was it the Garden History Society, the woman I was in touch with? There's a site at Lambeth. What I mean is a lovely church with a garden there, and there's a museum, a garden history museum in London. It was the Garden History Museum that we had some contacts with, and we were trying to do something together. It didn't eventuate in the end because the whole journal problem came up, and I left soon after that. I still had contact with the woman who's still in charge of that museum, but I don't know if the society does.
When you were inviting speakers to conferences, did you invite anyone particularly memorable, in your opinion?
Not that I can think of. That's not something I haven't thought about that for years.
Did you ever ask anyone from overseas?
Yes, we did. That you reminded me, Professor Stern, very, very well-known botanist. Wonderful, quite an elderly man when he came, but he was an outstanding speaker. And I do believe there was somebody else. We invited him at the time I was chairman, came out.
And in what way was he so outstanding?
He just came from another country with a different point of view, and he was an excellent speaker, and just presented things differently, I guess, to somebody from here would, the way they would.
Was George Seddon someone who was influential on the society?
Yes, he was very active. And everybody knew George, and he was very respected.
How was he influential?
Well, George had an architect's view of gardening. Everybody just came at it from a different angle. He was also very... very interested in the environment as a whole and the way gardens fitted into an environment. So that was a point of view that made a contribution.
And what about Carrick Chambers?
I didn't ever know him. I think I may have met him once or twice, but I don't remember.
John Turner? Was he?
No,
a member?
Don't even know the name.
They're both professors of botany.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know John Turner's name.
And another early person, I think, is Grace Fraser. Did you remember her?
Don't know that name either. No, don't know anything about Grace. Mm-hmm. She must have been very, very early.
She might not have been an important society member. I think she was an early landscape designer.
Yes.
But maybe not involved in the society if you don't remember her.
No. Mm. No, I don't.
Sophie used to talk about a very good friend of hers called Kitty Garn. Do you remember her?
Yes, I do. Actually, I'm surprised she didn't mention Alice. Somebody would have mentioned Alice Jeffrey, have they? Yes. So I always think of those three together for some reason. They used to come. I think they were all friends, yes. and they were all quite a bit older than my generation anyway. And they were all lovely people, all very knowledgeable. Alice, I remember better than Kitty. Alice had incredible plant knowledge, and when she came and visited here, I just remember walking around with her, and she'd be very direct and say, "I hope you didn't put that in. Take it out." But I actually like that. I like people to be direct, and I'll listen to their advice. I might not always take it, but I'll listen to it. So they were kind of, they were real stalwarts of the society because they came to everything and everybody loved them and everybody learned from them.
For Sophie, it was a very important social function as well as being an informative sort of society. Would you have found that too?
To some extent, but I wouldn't say it was terribly important. But for me, it was a wonderful experience. I'd all my life I'd worked, and I hadn't been involved in voluntary things because I'd almost always had a job. You know, few years having children, but so it was one of the first things I was involved in. I've been involved in lots of things since. So it was a great experience, whether you call it a social experience, I suppose you could.
Yeah. Who took over from you when you stepped down from chairman?
Margaret Darling. Mm-hmm. And she remained for a long time, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he gave up a short while ago.
Mm-hmm. And to your knowledge, did the committee's plans or aims change at all under her?
No, I don't think so. Not much. When I left, I really left. I mean, I didn't resign from the society, but I was so busy with my business, I didn't attend any meetings or any lectures or anything for years. So I don't have anything really to say about her years as chairman.
And do you go to many functions now?
No, but I'm trying to cut back on my work here so that I can do. I mean, as I said before, I recently went on a trip, a garden history trip, with Gwen and Roger Elliott to Ned's Corner and Lake Mungo, and I just loved it, and I enjoyed very much meeting a lot of the people that are still going to those things that were going years and years ago.
And are there historic gardens up there, or was that?
No, it wasn't a garden trip. It was really more an environmental kind of trip. We didn't go to any gardens.
Is that a path they might be following, do you think, to look at the environment more?
Well, there's certainly a lot of the members are interested in in that sort of thing. And I think Gwen and Roger Elliott have led a lot of trips, but they are not sort of gardening people. They might be Australian gardening, but their interests are much broader, and I think their trips are very popular. If you don't book to go, the minute you get the notice, you don't get in. So it shows that people are interested in a slightly wider wider area than just historic gardens.
And what is their connection with the society? Are they on the committee or are they just...
No. They're very busy people, no. They lead these trips and they must enjoy it because they've done so many. And presumably they're paid.
And do you have any other sorts of trips you'd like to go on? Would you like to see the society organising anything else that you'd be interested in?
I'm a bit over garden trips. I loved that trip up to Lake Mungo and Ned's Corner because it was different. And I can't think of anything in particular I would like to do. There's some things I haven't done, like go to Western Australia in wildflower time. I'll do that. The Garden History Organiser Tour, I'd go on it. Otherwise, I'll organise myself to do it sometime.
Have they done that in the past?
I think, yes. They've done some trips with a woman called Marion Blackman from the West, who was a speaker at a couple of our conferences. And she's led trips, but they're not garden trips. They're like the Elliots. They're trips to the outback and looking at the amazing and native flowers in the outback.
I must be finding that's what people want, mustn't it?
Well, it looks like it, yes.
Sort of following George Seddon's interests.
It is, actually, yes. Yes, I hadn't thought of it that way, but it looks like it.
Looking at it as a whole, more just a niche.
Yes.
In Australia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for that.
It's a pleasure.